How's it going, Reef Keepers? Welcome back to another episode of We the Reefers. I just want to reiterate to everybody, or any newcomers, that this podcast is available not just as a YouTube video, but also on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube Music. Pretty sure it's on Amazon. Pretty sure it's everywhere, along with every, like Pocket Casts and all the smaller podcast apps that are out there that aggregate. Podcasts from various larger platforms, totally available to you. And appreciate you guys sharing the podcast with. And I have noticed and been told by several core followers that they've spread the podcast and shared it with people, and I appreciate that. And I appreciate you guys also like being. Being cognizant of the kind of person that might want to, or be interested in the kind of content that I produce, because not everybody is, right? Like, not every reefer is interested in talking about, a lot of gear, a lot of industry side stuff, a lot of how, our society interacts with or acts upon, the reef keeping hobby. And those are some of the themes that I tend to cover a lot, just simply because I feel like there are so many podcasts out there that are just like a guy or two just shooting the what about, whatever, coral fish, just going back and forth about, what's going on in their world or, whatever. And none of it really steps over the line into the dicier stuff that many reef keeping influencers just don't want to cover, because either they have brand ambassadorships or sponsorships, or they're trying to attract those things, or they're scared of, all of the, fanboys of a certain, gear item or gear brand or whatever coming after them, losing subscribers. I don't really care about that kind of thing. I was talking about that with somebody this week, actually, and they were like, I've heard this several times, like, I don't know how you don't have more people following you. Like, maybe you should do this, this, and this to get more people to follow you. How do you only have whatever, I forget what it is, 1,200 people on YouTube? You should have way more. And I don't really approach what I'm doing that way. Just to kind of inform. I don't really approach it that way. It was clear to me early on that, the second that I started to touch on, like, more quote unquote real subject matter, more reality-based subject matter, or more interactions with like how society is influencing the hobby, just some deeper threads that there was kind of a, it wasn't like a, I think a lot of my followers and my subscribers already were on board with kind of, my loose vision and or approach, right? Or at least some of it. But there was like a short-lived exodus of people where I lost like, I don't know, like 100 subscribers real quick after I started producing the podcast. And some of those people voiced, pretty angrily that, I'm upset that you went there. Like, how dare you violate the sanctity of, only talking about fish and coral and inverts and stuff. Like, that's all I'm here for. Why would you? And it's like, look, I just feel like there's not enough skeptical voices in this hobby, and there's a concerted effort to ensure that most of the hobby stays lockstep behind only talking about and hyping up certain gear and certain aspects of the reef keeping industry, always the glorified aspects. And then other than that, just like, stay in your lane and only talk about fish and coral. And I just am not interested in doing that. So my slow growth of my quote unquote platform, YouTube, podcasts, all that, I actually see that as a benefit. I feel no need to grow, I feel no need to attract masses of people. I think that would water down the experience for me And for everybody else who's trying to have a discussion in the comments or on my Instagram or whatever, because you would inevitably get people for whom the hobby is not something they want to or think should be, you know, discussed on a deeper level, and or people who are like, you know, lockstep behind some idol or icon or business or what have you in this hobby. And that's just like, those people don't really represent like reality to me. Like, they're living in an alternate reality. And I'm interested in quality. I'm interested in slow growth with quality people. So those of you who shared, you know, what I'm trying to do with quality people, so that we can have a quality discussion, so that, like, you know, there's a concerted group of individuals who are reason-minded people, who like to think with logic and attempt to apply objectivity to their thought process, attempt to apply just basic, you know, critical thought behind everything that they're doing, who, like, are more apt to believe in what, like, science or research-grounded, you know, methodology has to say versus, like, what the guy with the coolest acro tank is trying to sell this week. Like, that's where meaning, at least for me, and I think for some of you guys, is derived. So I just wanted to start this podcast and just kind of do this reflection and this kind of, you know, commentary on my direction or trajectory or whatever, and just say that thank you to you guys for kind of helping me curate a community that I think is becoming a real bright spot. You know, I mean, pretty darn small in the scope of the whole reef keeping hobby, but I think we're a bright spot, definitely. Also, just need to let you guys know, this podcast may very well be the last podcast for a while, right? I kind of alluded to this in the last episode, but over the summers, because I have like a really weird teaching schedule usually, and also because my kid's off school and my wife has a typical 8-to-5 job, she doesn't work a totally bizarre, like, you know, schedule like I do due to, you know, college teaching being just one of the weirdest scheduled things ever. I think that it's about to get dicey. I got a lot of essays coming back to me to start grading. They're starting to pile up. I got to get going on that. I gotta shift my focus and shift my lens in life over to my professional side, you know, pretty heavy over the next, you know, like 3 weeks to get through to the end of the semester. And then beyond that, I don't know how the summer is going to go. It's the first summer that, like, my wife has been in, like, a quote-unquote real job, like a real career, right? So she's going to be gone, like, every day. It's just going to be me and the kid, you know, me dropping the kid off with relatives and running to, you know, get random classes taught on campus and running back, and I won't go through it all again. It's just going to get dicey, right? So bear with me and know that this is what I'm doing here feels incredibly valuable to me, so I'm going to try to do it as much as I can. If that means I get, you know, 2, 3, 4 podcasts out all summer, I'd be really happy with that. If it ends up being that I don't get a podcast out for 3 months, you know, and I got to wait till the start of next school year, just bear with me and understand that while I'm in limbo waiting to pick up where I left off with this, like, I'm not, my fire to keep going and keep producing content of this sort and having these discussions with you guys is not at all diminished, right? Not at all. In fact, it's probably hotter than it has ever been. So I will be back if I am away for a while, but just letting everybody know. So sorry to eat up the first 10 minutes of the podcast, just, you know, telling you guys all this and being a little bit sentimental, you know, at this point. What are we, 8 episodes in? I've put out 1 a week. The engagement's just been incredible. So, all right, let me take a breath. And this week, it's kind of hard for me to pinpoint the topic, so to speak. I kind of want to talk about, like, where reefing used to be, the journey of how it got to now, you know, what it's like now, how the LFS fits in, how social media fits in. This is going to be a wide-ranging podcast that kind of, you know, picks up a lot of loose threads in between more focused topics from throughout the first 7 episodes and kind of coalesces them, right? So stick with me. I'm sorry if some of it gets disjointed. I got a terrible night's sleep last night, but sometimes getting that bad night of sleep kind of slows me down so that I can actually pick through things better. So I wasn't going to do the podcast today, and then I was like, you know what? Maybe this will work out because I'm moving a little bit slower. Maybe I'll be able to parse through things and think through things and explain things with more of an even keel and, you know, get through this. So now, I don't know how many of you, I guess I do know based on YouTube metrics that many of you are like me, millennials. I seem to disproportionately attract people from my loose societal bracket, right? But there are still older reefers and younger than millennial reefers who clock in and follow my content at a rate of like 10% a piece. So like, you know, to the 20% that are like outside of my like age norm, this is going to be kind of an interesting experience for you guys, because when we talk about the roots of the reef keeping hobby, when it stopped being just a few guys trial and erroring this, and then like groups of people started to rally behind keeping, you know, saltwater creatures in tanks long term, I can't speak to that world, obviously, because I was born in 1990. I was nowhere, I mean, I was around, but I was like a little kid, right? I was nowhere near, you know, being in a position where like I could get into reef keeping at the time. And similarly, like very, very young generations, they might have, like Gen Z, might have no idea like that reef keeping used to be the way that I'm about to talk about it. Like, I'm going to go through kind of what I understand from my perspective of what some of the older people in the hobby, old school reef keepers, what their world used to be like. And again, this is based on just my perception, but that world is getting so distant and so foreign and strange in comparison to the world of reef keeping that we have now, that it would not surprise me if younger reef keepers are sit there and listen to this and go, whoa, you know, that it used to really be that way. Like, I'm not sure what they know and don't know, but me, 6 years in, you know, and what, you know, where I was born at, I was curious about how things used to be. And I've gotten to know some older school reef keepers and, you know, been kind of brought through the broad strokes of where this hobby began once it really started to, you know, gel together as disparate groups of people all united under the same banner, at least in America. So, I don't know years on any of this, right? Let's just say like pre-BRS, because I think that like the launch of BRS really did change some things, even though there were like BRS-like entities around. Nobody did it. Nobody did online reef gear, reef industry world quite as well as BRS, obviously. So like, this is like pre-BRS. Pre-BRS, I guess like 90s, early 2000s. I'm sure in the 80s too, but that's a little too far back for me to even conceptualize. So, but reef keeping as a hobby, it literally used to be that, of course, there wasn't like social media reefing, right? There were not reeffluencers out there, you know, showing off their latest gear and showing off, you know, these fire frags that they got, and there wasn't, you know, massive, you know, corporate coral farming operations that were, you're getting ads for in your email, and like, you know, it wasn't near any of that. The online, like, the internet was still nascent, and the, like, saturation rate of, like, you being exposed to, like, what of the hobby business entities wanted you to see on the internet was just not The algorithm was weak. Let's put it that way. The algorithm that feeds you what the people with money and influence and the businesses with money and influence want you to see, that algorithm at the time was either non-existent or weak. So instead of just getting everything shipped in from BRS or what have you, basically it's my understanding that, the reef keeping hobby, while the old timers had some like saltwater specific gear, a lot of times they were just using like freshwater gear in saltwater and just crossing their fingers and hoping it lasted longer than they expected it to last, or DIYing everything themselves, right? And then to be able to meet and discuss things, there was no reef to reef with some new giveaway every week and fun questions and tanks of the week and it wasn't I mean that some of that existed, but it wasn't nearly the like commercialized, like oversaturated thing that it is now. Back then, that was all fun and games, whatever forum presence existed at the time. But when you wanted to like go and really, immerse yourself in the hobby, you went and joined a reef group, being like, whatever, the Seattle Reefing Society, for instance, or the, Boston Reefers, a club or whatever. I don't know if those are real things, but I know that those clubs were real, those societies were real. I don't know if those names are real, right? And that's how you did it. You would go and either like meet at a place, like a, who knows, a bar or whatever, and talk reefing over beers and, compare methodologies and compare experiences and compare experiments that you'd be doing, or, sketch out like, DIY things that you'd been doing on a napkin to show your buddy, or you'd meet at a reefer's house. So sometimes a reefer would host and you'd get to go see firsthand, like, what gear do they have? How are they using it? What lighting do they have? Where are they placing corals compared to how I'm placing corals? What species of corals are doing well under this lighting and flow? What so like essentially the fabric of the hobby was not this like artificial digital fabric that is sewn by, massive business entities. It was actual human to human contact fabric that, you're standing in front of a tank with other people, looking other people in their eyes and going, what's that? How does that work? How could I do that? How did you get this coral to survive? What strength are those lights running at? They look really good at this brightness. What, like, the hobby was about human to human connection. Even though our tanks must exist as like disparate, separate islands, because you can't just take a tank with you to the reef keeping club meeting, right? We, as individual humans with agency, could take ourselves to go meet at a common meeting point and have a free exchange of thoughts, ideas, methods, just everything about our hobby. And it happened all the time. And there were reefing societies all over the place, right? Some of them that I've read about are in way smaller places than I ever would have imagined that one could exist, because now the last, like, old guard vestiges of this world only exist in major cities, right? So, like, I know there's some up the East Coast, cities like Chicago, there's some on the West Coast. But it has to be a significant population center for a reef club that has any clout and strength to exist, right? There's no way that, like, in my little rural city, I don't, like, for instance, I don't know one other reefer. I've never been to a reef club meeting. I don't know one other reef keeper in this entire place. So, like, I am literally just alone on an island. My PetSmart literally stopped carrying like food for saltwater fish because it was all just going bad in their freezer. like right before I moved here, they were like, oh man, of course you come now. We don't even sell anything like that. I mean, I have my nearest LFS is 90 minutes away. I have nothing here. And by the way, there are people in way bigger places than the place I live who feel the same, who are like, maybe I know one or two other reefers, but they live on the other side of the city. And like, you know, like there's no club thing here. There's no, you know, there's like a couple LFSs that like you got to drive 30 minutes to or whatever. Like, on a like grassroots, human to human contact, like, under like looking at other people who do what you do and understanding them on a human essential level and working together to grow the hobby level or you know like common platform, that doesn't exist anymore, right? It exists for, I would venture to say, a few lucky young people who are intrepid enough to walk into these, you know, groups of old salty dogs in these, you know, old reef clubs that are located in major cities and say, hey, I'm going to be one of you. Like that, but those are few and far between. I would say most young people don't even know how to begin finding one of those or have no interest in it because they feel like their needs are completely taken care of by like the algorithm has made it so that they believe that they're totally fine, they're totally taken care of. They can find a video for whatever they need. Why would they need to go talk to some old guy about his reef tank? Like that kind of thing, right? And it's interesting to me, but this fall of like the reef keeping society or club for me is a minute symptom of like this huge, like, you know, multi-symptomatic problem that has occurred in American society since, I guess, probably shortly after the dawn of the internet, right? Although it was kind of being eroded by other forces before that, it really accelerated when the internet started to gain strength and the algorithm was formed and, you know, people started looking to the internet first instead of looking at, you know, tangible, physical things, people, places in real society. But there's this concept of what's called a third place, right? A third place that you can go. So in America, I would venture to say, I'm not some philosopher, but I would venture to say that a significant part of the fabric of our society in the quote unquote olden days, right, which are not that old. This was still going on when I was a little kid, but a significant part of the strength of the fabric of our society was the high participation rate of Americans in quote unquote third places. And a third place is a place other than home and work where you can gather and have camaraderie and have common cause and give something of yourself to another group of people that you stand and look in the eyes and actually exist with, right? And actually seek to understand and actually seek to listen to and consider objectively as like a being that deserves respect along with yourself, right? So as reef keeping lost its third place, right? And I want to stress they're not all gone. It's just that most of these third places now are just, you know, places that are basically like little oasis spots in large population centers in America that are generally reserved for like very veteran reef keepers or old salty dogs, right? Maybe a few young people who have stumbled their way in over the years, right? But as those fell in the hobby, I feel like this hobby kind of started to turn. And again, I'm accessing based on what I've been told and what I have seen through my own research. I'm coming to some conclusions that I think I've accessed through that research and through these things that have been told to me. But it seems like this sense of like camaraderie and togetherness and like common discourse that existed in reef keeping as the hobby was built, as the foundation of the hobby was built, it was like eroded and destroyed by the onslaught of like social media reef world slash internet sales reef world, right? So I'll get into this more, but I just want to kind of point out that, you know, the feeling that you get now in America, where it doesn't really feel like there's a great sense of togetherness in most communities, right? Like, I'll just give myself as an example, right? And this isn't everybody's experience, but like, you know, I live in what is objectively on paper a safe city, a fairly affluent bubble, has good schools, has dedicated, hardworking people by and large, lots of young families, lots of you know, nice old folks that'll wave to you from their front porch, et cetera, right? Should be this idyllic thing. But like, if you go to like the local farmers market here, it's not very busy, right? If you want to trick or treat in your neighborhood, which is like a nice, safe neighborhood on Halloween, more than half the houses have the porch light turned off, right? Don't come bother me. Don't bring your sniveling kid up here. I don't know you. Like, I know the names. I've lived here 2 years, and I make it a point to try to meet, you know, people when I see them out and about in the neighborhood. I know the names of, I bet you there's like 100 people that live in my neighborhood. I know the names of like, I would say 15, right? Like, and by the way, it doesn't get better like on the work front. Like, I go to work, I go teach my individual classes. I have to come together for a department meeting once a month, and I sit in there with all these people that I don't know. I don't know all these people, right? I know a handful of them. I know like 10 of them. It's the largest department on campus, and I know 10 people. And other people have echoed this sentiment. And it's interesting because older people like that I see either in my, you know, my neighborhood or out in the town or, you know, on campus, who are part of my department or other departments, they seem to have good social fabric, right? Because they knew a time before now. But starting with like my generation and then extending, you know, getting worse, I would say, from what I have seen, getting worse in severity as you get younger, people don't have that anymore. People regard each other generally with either indifference or maybe even a little bit of suspicion and paranoia. And it doesn't seem like there's a concerted effort on anyone's part to kind of break down like a sense of like trust and togetherness and community in one another. It's not like, you know, any one individual's effort. And people don't generally want to be that way. We're social creatures, right? Like on every level, I think you guys, even though it's hard to explain, most of you know what I'm talking about. And you know that there's a little bit of a void in you where this like community aspect in this country used to be really strong. And I think it is all due to the fall of the third place. Take, for instance, like Rotary clubs, right? You ever hear of a Rotary club? Older people who are listening right now will just be laughing at the fact that I'm asking, have you guys ever heard of the Rotary Club, right? This used to be something that was super common, right? Every town had Rotary clubs. You can see like monuments or like, you know, like stuff on like a college campus or what have you that'll have like, you know, donated through the efforts of the Rotary Club or, you know, in this town or this city or. Who do you guys know who belongs to the Rotary Club? Seriously, think about it. They used to have hundreds of members in all the, any decent sized town would have dozens and dozens and dozens of people who were like, you know, out there beavering away, making a difference through like the Rotary Club, right? How about like, okay, here's one for you. My wife, belongs to the Daughters of the American Revolution, the DAR, right? She is the single person in her chapter that is under the age of 60. Let me repeat that. The only member under the age of 60. So again, what I mentioned earlier about how, like, I see that older people who are getting ready for retirement in my department at work, oh, they got plenty of friends. They got plenty of camaraderie. They got plenty of togetherness going on. Everybody else is sitting there looking at each other like, who are you? Like, it's a problem, guys. Like, it's a problem that, you know, we have lost this kind of, like, and it goes, by the way, a lot of older people blame this weird effect on, like, you know, oh, the, you know, young people are always buried in their phone. They're always buried in their phone. They're always, you know, that's the problem. They, you know, they all sit together at the table, drinking beer, staring at their phone. That's the problem. Like, look, the whole, you know, glued to your phone thing, probably objectively not healthy for anyone. However, I would say that more, like, I would say it's more what's more, it's less about the device itself and more about what's happening to you through that device. It's more about what the entity that is creating and maintaining and manipulating from far away out in some enclave in California or some, you know, up in Minnesota or wherever, that they're sending through the airwaves to your phone. That's really what's drawing you into the phone. The phone's just a delivery device, right? So I think kind of like there's a weird thing going on there where, like, the phone gets itself gets a lot of hate when the phone is really just a tool. It's just a delivery device, right? But there are forces at play that are seeking not just your money, but also they are seeking to destroy the third place. A place you can go that is not home, that is not work, where you can go seek the camaraderie of your fellow human, of your fellow man, and look at him as an equal and understand him as an equal. It's just another person. These are just people. They're not competition. They're not, you know, people who are trying to get the coolest coral pictures on Instagram before you do, or trying to snap up the last awesome frag at the, you know, before you do on the online sale. They're just people, right? They're just other people who love the same thing as you. I think that there is a concerted effort to break down and keep suppressed the third place in society. And I think that that effort is being, like, propagated and fought for every single day by the powers that be, right? In our hobby, quite frankly, I'll just tell you, it's Aperture that is by and large, right? Not to say there aren't other people with dirty hands in this, right? There aren't other entities in the business side of our hobby that have, you know, dirty hands on this. But by and large, due to the disproportionate benefit they receive from breaking down the third place and keeping it quiet and suppressed and low and scarcely attended, by and large, Aperture, they understand acutely that keeping that third place suppressed is going to mean more dollars for them, right? Their dream, the dream of Aperture is that every reefer be an island in the darkness, right? That's what they want. They want you to be an island in the dark, staying in your own home, scrolling Instagram endlessly, looking at all the oversaturated tanks and fire, worship hands, coral frags. All these, and by the way, who's posting those pictures? Everybody who's bought into their hype machine or everybody who's been sponsored by them or given a brand ambassadorship, right? They want that to be all that you see, all that you are saturated in. And then they want you to think to yourself, all right, I want to be like that because here's what they have. Radeons, crazy amount of Neptune Apex gear, you know, Nero powerheads, you know, whatever. Whatever it is that they sell is all over that tank. And the logical conclusion, because this is such a gear-driven hobby, is they are finding success because they have all those fancy bells and whistles on their tank, right? Because of all those $470 MP40s that they have. So you, in the dark, on your island alone, in your home, just keep doing what? Pressing the order button again and again and again. When that gets here in 3 days from Minnesota, I'm going to have the fire frags. All my corals will flourish. Fire, 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 worship hands. Oh yeah. That's what they want. They want you to just sit there and order, 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 order alone in the dark. That's what they want. So when you keep people separate in their own little bubbles like that, and they're looking out over the, you know, sea of the social media scape, and all they see is all these other reefers who have like better gear than them, or better tanks than them, or better frags than them, or cooler fish than them, or whatever. What I think naturally is spawned by that effect is this drive to compete, right? And as we know, this is a pretty masculine hobby, which is something I lament. Like, my daughter's super interested in this hobby, and I absolutely want it to be part of her life if she wants to be part of her life. She's young, so, like, things change, but, like, I recommend, like, at least fish keeping, if not full-on reef keeping, to anyone. I think it is a healthy endeavor to be charged with the care of such a delicate system, right? And to learn a lot of what goes into keeping this stuff, because I think there's so many, like, you know, strong aspects of it. Like, I mean, heck, it's a little bit engineering. It's a little bit, depending on how deep you get into it, a little bit of computer skill, a little biology. Like, there's all kinds of stuff that goes into this. So, I think, though, because our hobby is so masculine, there is also, like, a general, like, masculine drive to compete with the next guy. And when men are separated, alone in the darkness, hitting the order button again and again and again, and wondering, why isn't all this new gear making the difference and giving me awesome frags like that one guy who's getting free aperture gear every week? The answer must be that I need more of it. And I need to start loathing the people that do. I need to start... Like, you know, I'll go back to my, I'm a lapsed Catholic, but I'll go back to my years and when I was, you know, being brought up in the faith. Like, you know, it's like the whole coveting what you don't have, right? That coveting is something that spurs this competitive, like, ferocity in so many reefers. And you guys see it every day. And you've heard me talk about it before. How it often manifests is by spawning an alpha bro reefer, right? Seriously, you see these guys all the time. And I think that they are, while I don't think that they are necessarily 100% at fault for, like, what led them to become alpha bro reefer, because there are a lot of forces that are driving people to be shaped into alpha bro reefers. Let me tell you that. There's a lot of ad dollars and a lot of sponsorship dollars that have gone into the creation of the contingent of this hobby that is the alpha bro reefer contingent, right? But I do think that still, like, people need to take personal responsibility at the end of the day. And these people, like, just completely casting aside critical thought and objectivity and skepticism and just going lockstep with whatever gets the most fire symbols, whatever gets the most hearts, whatever gets, you know, the most subs on YouTube, whatever nets them the most attention, so that Aperture bestows upon them more gear, so that the algorithm pushes more subscribers to them, so that they're making more revenue. I think that these individuals are quite frankly, nothing short of cancerous to the reef keeping hobby. I'm serious. I know that's some pretty harsh language, but I think that these people represent a rotten core that is existing as a center point in our hobby, and that rot is perpetuated by the algorithm that is manipulated and kept going day in, day out, 24/7, 365 by entities not just excluded to, but basically Aperture, right? I mean, like they're as the top dog with the most influence and the most ad money flowing into the hobby and the hardest marketing and the most, zombie alpha reefer bro, soldiers behind them. Sorry, Aperture, but like you have to be the one that I focus on here, right? Again, not to say that smaller business entities in the hobby don't do this however they can. They just don't have they don't have the war chest, guys, to like go to war on this the way that Aperture can. And they fight this war every single day. Every day. They got rooms full of people that are dedicated to curating this entire effect. And I think that it is corrupting and watering down and making this hobby less accessible to people. I really do. The more I see of it, the more evidence of it I encounter. I think that, this drive for the coolest gear, the coolest gear, the coolest gear, just like that Alpha Bro over there on that channel. That's what I want. Radeon G6s. Fire, fire, fire. People invest in all this stuff and spend so much money on this stuff. And the pervasive feeling for new people coming into the hobby is, I gotta, unless they find somebody who can guide them through that noise, which is, by the way, the noise is so thick and so loud, whether it's on Reef to Reef, whether it's on Instagram, whether it's on YouTube, generally you can't escape it, right? And by the way, the algorithm doesn't want you to escape it because the algorithm works for the highest bidder. And the highest bidder in this hobby is Aperture, right? AKA Bertram. So I have begun to, and again, I try to approach it with a more logical mindset and a more reasoned mindset and try not to get tied down in like bitterness and resent and stuff like that, but I have found myself beginning to have to fight resentment toward the Alpha Bro Reefer who is, working as an agent for what's going on and just perpetuating all of this endlessly, to the detriment of, normal reefers, right? Average reefers, people who can't go out there and just, oh yeah, I'm just gonna buy, six XR30s. And some $470 MP40s. You know what? I'll take four of those. Like, unless you're being given that gear, and by the way, a lot of these guys, a lot of Reef Bro culture, a lot of members of it, they can't afford this stuff on their own, right? A lot of them are, want to be influencers and stuff. Not that they aren't influencers, but they're want to be like career influencers. And it, trust me, guys, I make like, not even $50 a month with YouTube videos. So like it's hard to make money. It's hard to make money via YouTube. I don't know anything about making money on Instagram. I have no idea. My podcast, not that any of those guys are podcasting, but even like in the podcast space, which is a ton of work, a ton of effort, a ton of time, I have no monetization of any sort on it. None. And in fact, beyond like YouTube monetization, I'm like tapping out on monetizing anything. I just don't have interest in it. I have no interest in it at all. But these guys want that. These guys want every single income avenue exploited because their end goal is like I can reef for free, right? And I can be reef famous, so they get this tiny little niche hobby, like the smallest hobby pond imaginable. The smallest amount of fame imaginable, right? And they're like, I am gonna be the biggest fish in that pond. I'm gonna be the biggest, most colorful fish in that pond, I'm going to get my gear for free because it's all I'm going to talk about and push and show. And then, like, hopefully I can get just enough revenue from all the different social media platforms I'm constantly beavering away at all day that I don't have to, like, do anything else. I can just, this can be my career. I can just be a refluencer, right? So I understand people wanting to be influencers, okay? I don't have any problem with that. I don't have any base problem with someone being like, I want to make my honest living through turning out useful content for people or entertaining content for people or meaningful content for people. There are tons of influencers that I have great regard for, right? However, the approach to the end of that rainbow being, I'm going to sell my soul to Aperture or to whatever big company, right? I'm just focusing on our hobby, but there are so many instances where influencers just sell out as fast as they can. They accept the free gear, the free tank, the free whatever, as fast as they can. And it's like, okay, you were doing something good, or you were at least doing something entertaining that was honorable. And now you just utterly sold out. And that's the only way they're getting a lot of this gear, guys. It's not like you need to go max out credit cards to get this gear and access this gear like they want you to think. Like all those little Affirm links that are all over the BRS website. You can finance anything with Affirm, right? You can finance a $50 bag of supplements with Affirm. Want to do it? I can't stand that stuff. Like, that's the implication there. Like, do you want to finance your way to being as cool as the Alpha Reef Bros who get everything for free and don't have any traditional career? They just want to be an influencer. And because that is their end goal, there's no way they could, and they're not making income independently on their own, you know, working a career on the side. They want to just go ahead and get all that gear for free and push, because that's the fastest, most expedient way to the end of the rainbow. It is this self-perpetuating cycle that's driven by the conscious decision of so many influencers to lockstep with this business entity that is so clearly seeking to control and pressure and shut down anything that could be a threat to them, right? And it just bothers me. You know, it's something I got to hold myself back from ranting on and take a deep breath and keep a clear mind about, because it does really upset me. Because I think that the average person, right? Like, I think income wise, life wise, I'm a pretty average reefer. I'm a man, right? I by no means do I think I'm a smart guy, but you know, I hope I'm not an idiot. I got a family, right? I live in, you know, a nice space where I can have a reef tank where, you know, it's not hazardous to anything or a hazard to the tank or anything like that. And I have my own career that I go and work, you know, every day of the week. And then I come home and I do reef keeping. And now I produce reef keeping content completely free of sponsorship and ambassadorship and all that kind of stuff. I don't make a lot of money, right? My spouse works. She doesn't make a whole lot of money. Not very many people make a whole heck of a lot of money, or their dollars are committed elsewhere when they do start to make halfway decent money, because everything costs so much money. You have a kid, you want to send him to college? Okay, send my kid to college or reef keeping, right? Guess what wins there every time? Maybe not every time, but most of the time, right? So my point is, when you're preying on normal people like that, creating this illusion that spans the entirety of social media that you must have this gear if you want to succeed. You've started in this hobby, you're lost, you're scared, you're killing coral, you really love this, but like, you know, your own conscience or your spouse is going to force you out of it if you keep killing coral. fish keep dying, whatever. What are you going to do? What's the answer? Well, the answer, every time you go on Instagram or Facebook or YouTube or whatever, is 10,000 Alpha Bro reefers like, look at my new Neptune gear, brah. Look at my new Radions, brah. Yeah. Look at all my acros. Fire, 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 fire. You can have this. Just lockstep behind me. Go finance through a firm today. Mr. Chili's waiting. That to me, that makes me feel sick, right? It makes me feel sick. And by the way, I was that guy. I'm not standing here on some pulpit like I am some, great intelligence that is trying to save you. No. I'm literally the idiot that did that. Thank God at the time I made in my previous career, I made enough income that I didn't have to finance any of it. But you wouldn't believe the amount of people who have reached out to me and been like, dude, if I had heard your podcast before, like, I wouldn't have debt right now if I'd heard your podcast. I've had like three people say it to me. I wouldn't have debt. I wouldn't have financed things through a firm if I had heard you talk before now. That's wild, right? Like, and by the way, like, yeah, I did make that income at the time. I'd like to sit here and be like, oh, if I hadn't made that income at the time, I wouldn't have financed anything. I can't say that. I am obsessed with this hobby. I am obsessed. So, like, I very well may have, right? I had to have it all. I had to have all the Neptune gear. I had to have those Radions. By the way, before I had Neros, which is not much better, I had Vortex, right? I sold them eventually because I was like, these are way less good than I thought they were going to be. That was one chink in the armor that appeared for me in my journey to kind of waking up and being like, I don't think that the value, I don't think the return on investment is really here. That was one domino in that chain for sure, was the Vortex. And I've said it before, you guys are probably sick of hearing me say it, but I just think it's funny. Worst value in reef keeping, the MP40, $470. You gotta be kidding me. So, by the way, that price is up. Like, I literally remember the $399 price tag on the MP40, right? I might be crazy, but I'm pretty sure I remember it. I'm pretty sure, like, 5 years ago, I don't know. It may have been like 409 or something like that. But we're essentially talking about, and by the way, what I said a few episodes back, I still hold. The MP40 is going to $499 this holiday season. Special for you. Actually, what they'll do is for the BRS, like big blowout Black Friday sale, they'll keep the price at $469, but they'll pretend like the retail price was $499. And then after that big sale, then the price will just be from now on $499 until they raise it to $420 or $520, right? Like, that's what's going to happen. And that's how they've operated since they took over these companies. No real innovation, no new developments in the product space that are, game changing in any way, much, much less even like decent iterative updates that I have seen, right? And they continue to just take all the money they save, not doing any work at all to actually improve the product lines at all these companies that they assembled, right? And they put that money right back into marketing to create, with the help of, granddaddy algorithm just having their back, this whole blanket that they swallow you in, and you can't see anything but their gear. And all the Alpha Reef Bros and their big SPS colonies, their big acro colonies. Like, that's literally the game plan. With the end goal being, of course, attracting Chewy with good numbers on paper, right? With good profits on paper. So, again, you can probably hear how I'm tired today. That's why I'm not like screaming at you, I actually moved the microphone down my shirt because I project really loud anyway. I'm a teacher, right? So like I'm used to doing that, but I moved the microphone down because even last time when I moved the microphone down a ways, I was super energetic that day and I was literally making the components in the microphone like buzz because they couldn't handle the tenor of my voice. So hopefully today you're not getting so much buzzing because I am exhausted, but I wanted to go through this nice and slow and pick my way through it. So here we are at like an hour, kind of talked about how reefing used to be for the old timers, right? Kind of talked about where I am at right now and what I'm planning on doing like through the summer and into the second half of this year, all that. You guys have that. Talked about the rise of social media, the algorithm, the influence of big business on it, the influence of that whole effect on reef keeping and the destruction of the third place, which contributes to kind of the fabric of our society breaking down, right? That used to be everything for us. And for all the factors that I just delved into, we're just at this point where like the third place has either stagnated out or it's just like gone, right? Just to kind of close that point out, and I'm trying to remember the name of them. So, how about like Elks Lodges? Anybody remember those? Maybe a few of them still operating, old people sitting there at a bar, in an Elks Lodge, facility or whatever. How about, what about like, I don't know what it's called. And there's all kinds of hilarious conspiracy theories surrounding it, but like, what are they called? Masonic temples? Is that what they weren't like, as I understand it, right? If you buy into some conspiracy theories, you might say otherwise, but, I think Masonic lodges, it might've been Masonic lodges, but, the Freemasons, right? I used to see that everywhere. I didn't, I'm sorry. I don't see it everywhere. But when I was a kid, I saw their lodges closing down and being remade and renovated into other things. So like that's what I saw of them was like the last, the tail end of them as all their, but like if you look at like former, Masonic lodges and stuff, it's crazy. I mean, they had so many members and so much influence and stuff. I mean, like, all of these entities, even stuff like, again, like, I've touched on this before, how like there's just this small number of elite people who appear to be, by and large, a lot of the people that Aperture is targeting for sales and where they're trying to push the hobby. They're trying to make the hobby more high dollar because they think that they can make more money that way, right? Instead of opening things up and lowering prices and, giving back some of that R&D that we've paid for over the years in the form of, actually abating some of the costs of the hobby and making it more accessible and growing it with newcomers and elevating like average reef keepers, their approach is to either take those average reefers and make them and try to force them into debt to acquire the gear that they, confusedly believe that they need based on social media, right? Which is all a concerted effort. Or they just want to sell to people who can afford to drop $470 on an MP40, right? So, like, I kind of see this in the third place in society too. Third places now are often reserved for only elite status people who have the, freedom in their life due to financial success to go and access those. And, like, that's great for that class of people. And again, I'm a capitalist. I'm not hating anyone for being successful and working hard. No way. However, it used to be that these things were accessible in some way. And, they were all over the place. Little societies and organizations and, and I know that, if somebody wanted to argue with me on it, they might say, well, then go find them, go join them, go. But they don't carry the, because they do. Many of them still exist. They don't exist as widespread as they did, right? But like there are many that still do exist. You still have a small chapter where like, you know, some aging people get together, you know, every other weekend or whatever in whatever organization. But like the prestige that it used to carry, like it used to matter that you were a member of the Rotary Club. It's something that you could talk about. It's something that you could be proud of. It's you go show your friends the statue that you guys, you know, raised money for and, you know, built on a college campus or like whatever. Like he used to mean something, right? And that's along with just chipping away at the membership of these things. Like we'll go back to just like the reef keeping focus of it. Like Aperture's chipped away at the Reef Society or Reef Club to the point that now they're just these, again, now those reef clubs are little like island chains, but they're still way out there in the dark, right? And they still contain reefers who push their little islands in the dark together to form a, what's the name? I'm gonna say it wrong. Archipelago? But ultimately, the vast majority of reefers from their little island, you know, as they clutch their phone with the BRS app up, from their little island, they can't see this group of islands out there in the dark. They can't see anything else. All they can see is when they look down at the screen in their hand, all this competitive, like at each other's throats, you know, drive to buy, more gear, more gear, more gear. 0% financing with a firm. I just, to me, like Aperture. It, on the marketing front, they are as close to like to achieving the total dream as they've ever been, right? However, I will say this, the cracks in the armor have begun to appear because the return on investment is not good enough, and people are starting to figure that out. And I think that the thing that caused the crack to really occur, to really get bad, because it was weakening, you know, the armor was weakening, but now there's a gap. The thing that caused the gap to open, small as it may be, is that Trident NP that I talked about last time. Instead of innovating, instead of, you know, changing the form factor of the Trident and making it modular with another piece, or actually going for it and really making an all-in-one machine and still supporting the old Trident, but creating an all-in-one five-part testing machine. They just reuse the same body and we're basically like, by the way, like, you know, I don't know how they're doing reagent. Like, you know what? I'll save that for another podcast, but I think that reagents are going to be kind of a weird thing. I think we're going to have to mix some of our own reagents to get the Trident MP to work. So, like, they're offloading, if I'm right about that, they're additionally offloading, like, work onto the end user just in the name of them not having to redesign the Trident or run a new production line for a different, you know, body or retrain staff or anything. All representing savings for them. No new boxing, no nothing. So this lazy approach, I would venture to say, has finally been pushed to a point where some people who were happy and content living in Aperture Dreamland are starting to wake up and they're looking at it going, okay, a Maven is $1,200. It tests two tanks, it tests five things. It has the computer brain and like encapsulated inside of it if I want to build out a controller system from it. I can remove like the cuvette and other parts of it to service it myself and clean it. Yeah, what are you offering, Neptune? The best answer Neptune has is you're buying an Apex Junior, their entry level, you know, device, their entry level computer brain for their system. Then you have to buy the Trident, and then you have to buy the Trident NP. No. That this is the moment where the gap has appeared in their armor and people are starting not, you know, again, it's the fringes. It's not like the, you know, hardcore people, but like some of the people on the fringes are going, this is interesting. Like, I thought Aperture, you know, and I thought Neptune was way better than Hydros. I thought, you know, Aperture had this. Like, you know, what's this? This doesn't make sense. In fact, you saw a little bit of it if you guys read some of the reviews or watched some of the video of, you know, like normal people, us normals, interacting with the Aperture guys at RAP, Reef Palooza. Look at some of the video of like normal people, like in the background interacting with these guys, or read some of the accounts, even on the Neptune official Facebook forum. Oh my gosh. Like those guys that Aperture put out there, these quote unquote experts on Neptune product, they didn't know what they were talking about. Like they would be asked pointed questions about the product and just direct a person standing in front of them asking them for information to go to a web page. Because again, like a bunch of those guys, I'm not saying none of those guys was like a engineer or a product guy. But a bunch of those guys are probably just business majors, right? I'm not knocking business majors. We need them, right? I teach them every day. So certainly some of my most personable and funny students, and plenty of them whip smart. But do they have the ability to answer like a pointed question about how a product is going to operate on a delicate reef system? Maybe not. Right? Especially if they're not a reefer themselves. I'm not saying none of them have reef tanks. I don't know these guys. But if you had to field a technical question and then refer them to product literature on the internet, instead of being able to stand there with the device right next to you and look at it together and understand it, I'll give you the contrast here. It used to be that Neptune would literally, like, remember Terrence at Neptune? Yeah. Like, Terrence would literally be there in the booth to show you the product and answer your questions on it, right? One of the drivers behind the development of products at Neptune, who's in the trenches with the engineers figuring this stuff out, making actual decisions about it, like a leader in the company was actually there. Not just whatever guys Aperture had to the office for some weekend training and then slapped a polo on and sent them out there. Like, guys, it's just a different ball game now, and everyone can see it. A crack has appeared in the armor, right? So, this kind of spills over, interestingly, into other areas of the hobby, right? And one area where I think this is really being felt right now, this whole Aperture hardcore ground game in the internet online space, creating all these reefers as islands in the dark, this whole approach, right? This can be seen in the LFS and really recently, like the terrible struggle of the average LFS in America. So here's my experience with local fish stores. Now, look, there are people who are like local fish store people. And when I level some of this, I'm gonna level some criticism at local fish stores, okay? Like based on my experience, I'm not saying that there are not star-studded local fish stores out there that deserve patronage and deserve support. That you should go out of your way to go brick and mortar over online because they do such a dang good job. There are those out there. However, generally, my experience with local fish stores, which is deep and wide-ranging, has been like this, okay? You walk in the door of the local fish store, you look at the shelves, probably not everything has been restocked, okay? Probably it's not super clean. Probably it has a not very pleasant smell in certain corners of the store, right? Probably there's salt streaks and salt streams that have been running down the fronts of the aquariums, making it hard to see, making it harder to see into the aquariums to see creatures that you might want to buy. Are is the fact that the glass isn't clean, right? Also, there's usually a dead clownfish or two floating around. Also, when you look at the coral, there's probably some pests that you can see with your naked eye, if not Aptasia growing in greater numbers than coral frags in the frag tank. Okay? So, like, I would say that out of every 10 fish stores that I've been in probably 25 fish stores, okay? I stop whenever I'm out traveling for any reason ever, and I used to travel a lot for my job. I've been to like every LFS in Columbus North, basically. And like Columbus, Ohio North. I've been in every single one of them. So I understand that like a local fish store owner might explode at me saying these criticisms about local fish stores in general, because I understand that it is almost an impossible ask that they are able to address all of this stuff, because oftentimes it's like one, two, or three guys desperately trying to run this whole operation. There are very few small businesses more difficult to operate than a local fish store. Seriously, right? Until you gain traction and get enough income that you can support other employees and pay them well enough that you're not going to get employee turnover and they can stay there and be dedicated and, you know, actually flourish this business out, maybe expand it a little bit. Until a local fish store gets to that point, when it first starts out, especially, and it's just in an area of town or a small area where like it's never going to get bigger than what it is, it's just going to barely make it forever. I understand that there's some level of like you'd have to work 24 hours a day to get everything done. It's just not humanly possible. But here's the thing. A juggernaut is essentially standing against the local fish store right now. The local fish store to Aperture in their eyes represents a third place. It represents another place where people may meet, where people may see each other as equals in this hobby, where people may compare notes and compare experiences, where people might tell each other about products that are not Aperture products. By the way, where products might be sold that are not Aperture products, right? The LFS. And like, I don't care what Aperture says about the importance of our business partners and local fish stores across America. I understand that a lot of local fish stores across America are selling Aperture goods. I understand that a lot of them are pushing Aperture goods. I would not hesitate to believe that there are local fish stores that, as they're struggling to survive and the popularity of Aperture has risen and all their different product lines, they have taken competing product lines off the shelves to try to push Aperture because they're trying to get the hype machine on social media to feed their store's income, right? Also, I have almost no doubt that there are local fish store owners who are so close to going under that they are nervous about the thought of putting like Hydros on the shelf next to Neptune products. Because what if somebody posts a picture and this gets back up the chain somehow and my location's tagged and now I'm getting a call from Aperture like, hey, you know, and by the way, that's total speculation. I'm not saying that's happening. That might be, you know, something that flies way under Aperture's radar, but would I be paranoid about it as an LFS store owner? Yes. If I were struggling in my business, my bottom line was, you know, tight? Yes, for sure. Let me take a drink. All right. Maybe that's just me. Maybe that's a personality thing. But if a significant part of the income of my business was dependent upon flashy Aperture products and Aperture, what it, like knowing Aperture's agility and adaptiveness and attention that is spent on curating social media, I would be nervous about it getting out there especially if my business was struggling, like so many local fish stores are, I would be nervous about selling a competitor's product right next to it and what the perception up the ladder might be, especially if selling Radions or, you know, whatever, selling Neptune products, selling anything in their lineup was like a core part of the income that was coming into my business, right? I don't know what the breakdown is, like coral, fish, I'm sure it's different in every store, like livestock versus gear. But I have to assume there's some meat on the bone with gear, and it would probably make me nervous. So the aperture effect has that impact on local fish stores. And it almost seems to me that the local fish store, especially since so many of them are struggling right now, you hear it all the time. Honestly, what a local fish store could do to combat this, and again, you know, maybe it's a pipe dream, but like, I feel like local fish stores, a lot of them, what would go a long way for them to getting more people through the doors is like killing pests, is wiping the tanks a couple times throughout the day if they have salt streaks coming down them, is scraping the glass every night, spending another hour there scraping the glass so people can actually see into the tanks and they don't look all scummy with algae, right? A lot of it is little stuff, right? Buying a, you know, cheap cleaning robot that's gonna, you know, zip around the retail area and just, you know, suck up any, you know, candies the kids have dropped as they walk through there with their dads earlier that day or whatever. Like, a lot of it, I've been in so many just like filthy fish stores. Maybe that doesn't bother some people. It always puts me off. It always keeps my wallet in my pocket when I just feel like everything's filth, right? And so many of them end up being that way. And I know it's because I see the exhausted fish store owner up there at the front of the store, like, you know, working on his adding machine, you know, trying to make ends meet while the store falls apart around him because he doesn't have time to get to everything. I am sympathetic, right? But at the end of the day, like the way our system works, okay, it is capitalism. So either you have to figure this out and deliver something to the customer that is going to like cause the local fish store to rise again and be a viable like quasi third place that we can go that, you know, is maybe not completely locked into place by aperture at every turn. Or yeah, like the local fish store is eventually just gonna be, it's just gonna be pushed out of our societal like economic model by the likes of Aperture. It's gonna happen. They are dying. Local fish stores are dying. Maybe, you know, this would be a good way. Maybe they start doing more quarantine work, right? It often seems to me that local fish stores just get wild caught fish in, dump them into tanks. I see that like several of them die and they don't clean them out. I see this when I go to fish store, you know, the local fish stores that are up north of me. And then they don't treat them. So they got all kinds of diseases. You put them in your tank, and they're, of course, the impetus to quarantine is on the end user, right? But what if it wasn't? What if local fish stores started to pick up that banner? Start quarantining some of these shipments. Do it. Or quarantine on request, right? And do it properly. To have a quarantine area where people can come see their fish in quarantine whenever they want to stop by while it's going through quarantine, right? Do the same thing with coral. Double the price. I would buy within my price, my reasonability range. I would buy coral quarantine for a lot of times, double the price of just like a wild, unclean frag, for sure. So there are different ways I think that like the LFS can shake things up to drive traffic to start to get some of their own agency back and get out from under the pressure of the Aperture model. Because right now they're so tied, so many of them I feel must be so tied to the income that they're getting off of Aperture products that they're like, you know, what do we do? Like we just gotta shut up and like keep trying and hope that next month isn't the month that my landlord kicks me out. Like, guys, do something, right? Like, you know, I don't want to see the LFS die because the few LFSs, so like, who knows if they even listen to this, but I'll give a shout out to the single best LFS that I have ever, 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 ever been in. And that is Matt's Corals in Gahanna, Ohio. Oh my God. Like that, now that was an operation right there. Like Matt always had like two or three employees. He did tank servicing on the side, but his store was neat and tidy. I mean, he must have some level of OCD because it was beautiful in there. It never stank. The tanks were at like a perfect height. I would see him there with a new shipment of corals, literally looking at them like in the light up close to his eye with tweezers, picking off anything suspicious, cleaning all the coral out. Like, he never dead fish in any of his livestock tanks, never algae on the glass, nothing. Now, granted, he had like at least a couple other employees, and it was, I think he expanded into the building next to his. Like, he had this like little strip mall location that was very crammed. So, like, the one downside was that you were always squeezing past other people wanting to look at coral, you know? But it allowed him to like curate this small space to be like this beacon in the whole region, I think, because I had been to every operation around there. There's so much Aptasia and all the other stores combined. Oh my God, terrifying. So yeah, like I've seen, and by the way, I've seen a couple others, not quite that were as good as Matt's, but like that were like, yeah, this is what it needs to be. And by the way, they were always bustling. I mean, I spent so much money there. And the other couple locations up in northern Ohio that I would pretty regularly stop at, they were the good ones were just busting out the seams with people, even in the middle of the day, even during the workday. People stopping by on their lunch, people bringing their families in there just to look around, and then they end up buying a guppy tank or something, you know, for their little kid because their kid's so excited they can't help it. Like stuff like that is what key like. You have to go that extra mile as a local fish store in order to drive that kind of business response, right? And then you get to kind of, not all the way, but you get to have more agency because, like, let's say that, you know, you start selling hydros and, like, you know, all of a sudden, like, and this is a total hypothetical. Again, I don't even know if this would happen, but let's say your Neptune contract got dropped, right? Then it's not that big of a deal because more of your income's coming from fish and coral. So I think to like regain their own sense of agency and regain their sense of prominence, and before people hit the buy button online for a coral, they're like, let me go see what my LFS has first. I think most local fish stores need to take it to the next level. And again, for many of them, that's an impossibility. Because for many of them, it's one horribly overworked guy who, no matter how much he works and kills himself, he's not going to be able to make it all happen. And that's sad to me. Again, like it is sad to me that a kind of third place, like the only thing left after so many of these reef societies died out, is now also dying out, right? The other thing, by the way, we can talk about like Aperture and gear all day. What about Aperture and coral? What about Aperture and coral? All the partnership videos and, you know, partner efforts with, you know, coral houses that go on. I'm not going to get too deep into it, but like, you know, I know they got like, they have to have things worked out with some of these big coral operations in Florida and stuff like that. And I see those operations, like just their stores and their frag tanks and everything are just banging overloaded with Aperture gear at every turn, right? So, like, they have kind of a you scratch my back, I scratch your back, whether it's a written or an unwritten agreement. Like, the whole massive, oversaturated, overpriced online coral hype machine, that is a whole separate crazy thing. That, because I'm not like a guy who's constantly buying coral, I'll admit I can't talk about that with as much confidence, right? But I can still see the writing on the wall. And when you've got those operations pushing nonstop pictures of like banging, oversaturated, touched up photography coral frags at you all day long, and you got all your favorite reefing influencers posting fire symbols and worship hands all over it, like, you're gonna get dazzled. Like, that's what, again, it happened to me all the time for years in this hobby when I started, all the time. And so much money that would have otherwise gone to coral frags that I could actually like see and hold in my hand at a great local fish store, at Matt's, at in Gahanna. I could have gone there and looked at very similar frags and paid way less money for them. But instead, I bought them off some big coral vendor because, oh, that one of my favorite guys at BRS was in there just last week. They posted videos where they're walking through and like, ah, it's so cool. And yeah, I just fell right down that hole and wasted my own money, got the same frag I could have gotten at my LFS and for way less. And that is another thing working against the LFS. And I don't know how you fight that because, like, again, Matt's corals, in Ohio, they were doing everything right. Everything right that I could see. Everything was clean, everything was organized, like no dead livestock, they're cleaning off their corals like meticulously. They were knowledgeable. I mean, everything right that a small little LFS operation possibly could have done right. And I still bought half my coral online. And the same frags were there waiting for me for half the price right down the road. That's crazy, right? So, yeah, I feel for the LFS. I'm worried for the LFS. My hope for the third place is kind of, it's waning, right? And here's what I would say, and I'll leave you guys with this. So, I've kind of covered what I think the LFSs could try to do to stand apart and regain some of their own agency in the face of this whole effect that has coalesced over the last 20 years, right? What we can do? Now, look, the reef clubs aren't coming back, right? They're not. We've changed too much. Reef societies aren't coming back. We're not just going to suddenly start some massive grassroots national movement to bring these things back into prominence. It's not how, by the way, it's just not how younger generations are wired. It's like me sitting in that department meeting and everybody over 60 has got a big clique of friends that they're chit-chatting with. And like, I'm like talking to like one or two people that like, I don't know. Like, it's totally different. One or two people, if anybody that I talk to, like, and it's the same way for everybody else who's under like 40, I would say. Pretty much everybody under 40 is just sitting there like alone. And that's kind of the story of how we are right now. Maybe long term we have big societal focus shifts that change these trends, but it will take like whole new trends of human behavior to shift course on this and start like feeding back into these third places so that they can slowly come back to life. It's not happening tomorrow. It's not happening because one guy calls for it. It's not happening because 100 guys call for it. It's not going to happen like that. So I would say this. We basically have to establish digital third places, right? Because that's where we are. We have to establish digital third places in reef keeping. So I would say that of the minority of influencers out there who, the minority of influencers out there who are skeptical influencers, I would say that those skeptical influencers need to pay better attention to one another and need to watch each other's content more and need to spend more time thinking about the various aspects that, you know, each in, like skeptical influencers focusing on and start kind of like referencing that in their own material or doing live streams together or whatever. Like, I think that like those few objective, like critical thought centric, skeptical social influencers out there in the reef keeping hobby can ill afford, the hobby can ill afford to have those people remaining disparate from one another. And even if they're not going to, you know, it's not like they're going to come together like some kind of Reef Avengers squad or anything like that and, you know, start doing, you know, content together sitting in the same room or anything like that. But I think that, you know, the people who follow influencers who are these, you know, more skeptical, reason-minded individuals, I think that the people who follow them need to carefully spread the word of those people and, you know, spread the exposure to those channels. And I think that additionally, people who follow, like, I urge all of you who follow me, have more discourse with me. By the way, even if you don't agree with me, in fact, I'd almost say, especially if you don't agree with me, as fun as it is for me to see you guys agree with me and back me on stuff and root me on, I think it's much more important for our hobby and for us as individual people and as a group of people, right? To, you know, and by the way, people think of a challenge in today's highly charged world as like having a fight. How about we just have discourse? How about we just have like kind, upbeat, reason-minded discourse? I love that stuff. If someone's like, hey, you said this, I see why you're saying that, but what about this? Because I think you might be kind of wrong about that because I've seen this, this, and this. Look at this article or I live for that stuff, guys. I live for that stuff. I am an ever-changing person in my perceptions and understanding. So when someone presents me with evidence or like a contrary experience and says, hey, you might have been wrong about that. Did I'm not disrespecting you, you just might have been, you know, like let me show you something else. I am all in, man. I want to know what the something else is. And if it is legit, my entire perception of something can change on a dime. And I'll be the first to admit, oh my God, I assumed that completely wrong. Like, and I'll address it in the next podcast or the next video or whatever, or the next Instagram post or, you know, whatever it is. I think more of that should be happening, and we should be the whole Alpha Reef bro mentality, the whole fire hands worship symbol, acros and radions and vortex whole approach. We shouldn't go to war with it. You're gonna just entrench people more if you go to outright war in the comments section of a video or on an Instagram photo or whatever. Don't go to war with it. You know, have a better mentality than that. Just stay your course and try to bring more people onto that course with you through positivity. Sorry, I had to take a drink there. That's what I would say. Be relentlessly positive and don't accept bullying. Just ignore it and just move forward and try to build the hobby in a productive direction, right? That's what I have to say. Sorry to be kind of all over the place. I had a lot to bring together. I hope it made sense. And I hope you guys have a great week. And I hope to be back next week. But again, if I'm not, I apologize. I will make another episode forever, like you can consider this a forever promise from me. Whenever I am next able to make an episode, I will. Always. Have a good one, guys.